Blog Talk Radio.
Sun's on my back, wind's in my ear. I haven't felt this good in years. See all the people in the field all lined up in a row. We got a couple more long hours of work before it's time to go. We're all working.
Hello and welcome to Those Darn Guys Who Happen to Be Therapists. I'm psychologist and e-therapist Dr. Jim Weaver. Joined today with my couples therapist, Dr. David Sanford, and Hughes Kraft is not with us today. Mark Kiefer just called in a little bit ago from China, and he's been having too good a time over there, and he's exhausted. It's actually 11 o'clock China time, so he's going to bed, and it'll be David and myself, and we will be boldly going out on the podosphere once again where no therapists have gone before. Well, we're failing that, hopefully putting the fun back in dysfunctional and bringing insights into the issues of life, love, and the search for a decent relationship. The topic this morning is divorce the solution to a problem? And I'm joined here by David. David, why don't you start out?
Yes,
is divorce the solution to a problem?
Well, actually, I framed it slightly differently. I framed it not as a question, but as a way of looking at divorce.
Okay.
In other words, in my counseling practice, I'd like people who are considering divorce to look upon it as the solution to a problem. Doing that has a couple of advantages. One is when you think, well, the first is it requires you to define what the problem is, or at least encourages you to define what the problem is that divorce is going to be used as a solution. And if you say it is a solution to a problem, that brings up the possibility worth discussing that there are other solutions to whatever the problem is than getting divorced.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what I had in mind.
Right. I think that's an excellent way to look at it. Yeah. And then you can start thinking about options, brainstorming about, you know, different ways to solve that problem. Divorce may be the one that you come up with in the end, but at least you're opening up to a different kind of a view of it and exploration of it.
Sure. So what I did thinking about this topic today is to break it down into four parts. One is, what are some fairly typical problems that lead to divorce? And the second one is, what are alternative approaches to those problems?
Mm-hmm.
The third one is, under what situations would most people agree that divorce is desirable?
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth one is, I want to say a few words at some point about my general view of marriage, under which comes my general view of divorce.
Okay.
All right. So is that okay?
It sounds great. Why don't we start at the top? Why don't you start with number one, and then we'll see if we can go through them methodically.
Problems leading to divorce. Here's what I've got listed. Now we can go back and take, if you're interested, look at the ones that are interesting to you or both of us. One is, we fight all the time. We can't seem to solve any problems. We never get anywhere. The house is full of tension and conflict. And second, we have incompatible goals that appear to be unresolvable. One of us really wants to have children, and the other says, no, I don't want to. And one I haven't written down, but that reminds me of, no, I do have it. Betrayal. Somebody feels like you have betrayed me. You have betrayed me by having an affair. Mm-hmm. Or you have betrayed me by misleading me. You wanted to have children when we got married, and now you insist that you're not going to. Another one is, I don't love you anymore, or I'm not in love with you anymore, as it's usually put. I will always love you. You're the parent of our children, a parent of our children, but I don't love you anymore. And that's not enough for me to stay married to you under those conditions. A similar one is, our marriage is dull and boring. And I just don't want to live in an institution. Marriage is a fine institution, but I don't want to live in an institution anymore. Mm-hmm. And then the last one I got down is, I met somebody new, I'm in love with somebody else.
Right.
I'm sure
which
there
goes
are others,
with.
But...
Right. Yeah, there's probably a bunch. But those do strike me as the ones that I, you know, that I see in my practice fairly regularly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not coming up with much more. I think I met someone else probably connects to the last two. Marriage is dull and boring, or I'm not in love anymore. You know, somehow something's happened. You haven't felt fulfilled. You haven't felt good. You felt bored. Somebody else looks attractive to you, or you know, somehow lets you know that they're attracted to you. And all of a sudden, things are quite exciting.
Are you having an affair, actually, with that person? You've already begun, you know, a fairly advanced relationship with that new person. You just haven't, beforehand, you haven't told your spouse about it.
Sure, sure. I mean, it can be anywhere along the lines of that. You can, on the one hand, say, you know, I'm interested in somebody and I want to pursue them. It hasn't gone beyond a little bit of flirting, which we talked about a few sessions ago. By the way, today is our 40th episode.
I noted that. That is indeed. Maybe we have to come to an end because I don't think there's anything about marriage we have not already dealt with. And everybody that's been a regular listener is probably so close to 100% perfect.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
we're not needed, man.
We might have to do one or two more. I don't know. But
kind
anyway,
wrap
back to,
it up.
Yeah, really. So okay. So those are all problems, and there's potential solutions to each of those. If you look at your schema there, in terms of what are the solutions are. Or if those are the problems, what are the solutions? What was number two on your list, David?
Incompatible goals.
Oh, yeah.
And number one was we fight all the time. We can't solve problems. It's just, you know, the tension's getting to be unbearable.
Right. But you said problems leading to divorce was number one. And then what was the next thing of your four?
Oh, then the next general category, possible solutions, alternative solutions.
Within marriage, right.
Yeah, you want to dive in at that level?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
You know, fighting all the time, discussing things and coming to an ability to resolve issues is a skill. So there's skills that you can learn about that. So that's one possibility.
Let's stay with that one for just a minute, huh?
Sure.
I think it is sometimes said that since driving a car is a skill, and you have to go to driving school and you have to pass a test, then you get your license to drive. Some people argue that really marriage ought to be similar. In the sense that it is a skill-driven activity, you can do a lot of problems. You can have really serious crashes if you don't get yourself some training in the skills of marriage. And and so on and so forth. And I think, I don't know about that as a requirement, although I'm sort of in favor of it, but I do feel that enough people who get married because I am in love, you know, do not pay sufficient attention to the fact that in order to stand in marriage, you can fall in marriage easily. Life presents opportunities, but in order to stand in marriage, you have to acquire skills. And I think for most of us, it's not been broken down as to what are the areas of relationship that are skill driven, and what, you know, what kind of skills are needed.
Yeah, you know, I think I took family life or something like that when I was in high school, way back in the dark ages. And there were some, you know, there were some good topics and some good skills in that. But I you know, I would think that that would be a terrific part of a high school or even a college curriculum. I mean, you think about one of the biggest endeavors that you have in life is to form a partnership with somebody, a lifetime partnership. Supposedly, that's what, you know, that's what you're signing on to when you do the marriage vows, and yet that really large task on your part, we don't give too much attention to. How do you prepare for that? What skills do you need to have? What do you do when you hit bumps? You know, people don't even talk that much about, you know, you're going to hit difficulties. There are going to be challenges in marriage. And I think that would be, you know, something for everyone to think about before they get into marriage. What are my skills in this? How good am I at that? Especially if you've been divorced once and it hasn't worked out. What have I done differently? You know, sometimes you can blame your partner and say, you know, it was their fault. I did everything right, and now I just have to find the right person. That was the wrong person. But I think that that's not really taking enough responsibility and looking at your own issues.
Yeah, I agree. I agree absolutely. Fortunately, if you miss that in high school and don't get it in college, and you get into trouble, then one thing to do, trouble within your marriage, then one thing to do, sort of following the outline of today's session, is recognize the situation as a problem, and before you decide on divorce, before you make things so terrible between the two of you, sort of decatastrophize the whole thing, and rather than blame each other, say, look, there are skills that we clearly need and we don't have them. We collectively don't have those skills that we need. And then you either go to a therapist, a counselor, relationship counselor, who will help you identify the skills and help you learn them. That's definitely a possibility. Or it may be that there are other vehicles. You belong to a church or a synagogue, which offers some kind of pastoral counseling, or you find that there is an educational training in marriage group that you can join, but that requires that you, first of all, you stop blaming each other. You take this, you neutralize it in the sense that you stop blaming each other and you stop assigning the difficulties to the character of the other person.
Yeah, I think that's.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, I think it was more or less done.
Okay. I was going to say, I think that I see as one of the biggest problems is to have people stop and be more self-reflective, to stop blaming and say, you are the problem, the solution lies with you. And I think that's something that all of us can profit from, stepping back and saying, how am I contributing to this problem? Where are my skills lacking, or where is my approach making the situation worse? And And if you can do that, then you can get more cooperation from the other person. If you're saying I'm looking at my stuff, I'm looking at my responsibility in this, then they don't have to be taking all the responsibility to say what you're doing wrong, and vice versa. If they're taking some responsibility, you don't feel such a pressure to convince them and to push them and to make them look at their part in it. So, but it's hard to get there for a lot of people.
Yeah. Help me with a word, if you
sure.
will. I'm looking for a word. I use decatastrophize, which I'm sure is not even a word. But when you take like this, a situation of relationship out of the area of mutual blame, and you make it about skills, you do what? You got a word that goes with that?
I don't. I think catastrophize is a word, and I like it. And since you and I agree that it could be a word, it's a word.
It is a word.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Underneath the skill-driven approach,
yeah,
as an umbrella to it, is accepting the value and the notion that there's a difference between falling in love and standing in love, and that standing in love requires different attitudes, patience, compassion, a willingness to stop blaming, a willingness to find out what do we need and to work to get it without blaming your partner. Standing in love requires different attitudes and a different approach than falling in love. Right? Falling in love maybe requires a parachute, but that's about it, you know.
I like that. That sounds like a title of a good title for a book. Falling in Love Requires a Parachute. Excellent, David. Hey, listen, we're talking about ways to, you know, to work some solutions. Books is a really good one. I think if you can latch onto a good book that really speaks to you and speaks to your partner. You know, two books that I really like are Getting the Love You Want by Harville Hendricks and The Seven Principles for Making Marriage Work by John Gottman. I think those are two excellent books. And one of the things that I recommend to people is that you actually read the book together talk about it as you're going through it. Because you can read it and have ideas and you can say, oh, here's another thing that my spouse doesn't have, and here's another thing that my spouse needs to work on. But if you can talk about it together, you can then see what kinds of the plan or what kinds of work you need to do together. So I mentioned those two books because the best book for this is not quite out yet, and that would be your book, David. When is that coming out? I know you're working hard on it.
You saved me. Oh, no, you don't need to say that. Oh, dear, I'm way too modest to have my book mentioned. You saved me with a craven plug of my own book. Well, Hendricks,
I'll collect the fee after the show.
Okay, that book is called Everyday Love, and it's done, first draft, and I'm in the middle of rewriting it right now and about to send material off to a publisher that I hope will say, oh, send me more. I just love what you've sent me. So,
excellent.
We'll see.
So if somebody can wait, your book will be coming out, in sometime in the future. But if you can't wait.
And if you can't wait. Yes.
Yeah.
Both Jim and I do telephone counseling email counseling.
Right.
So, you know, there you are. There's no reason for you to have.
I also do video conference counseling, and it works well for couples. And also, I have the capacity to do couples in different locations, three screens, one husband one place, wife another place, me another place.
Enough about us.
One more possible suggestion for people is our friend Joe Melnick's DVD couples work. It's got a workbook, and it's got, I think, I don't know, 11, 12, maybe more DVDs. And son of a gun, I am blocking on the name of his program.
I don't have it either.
Yeah, you can look it up on, I want a brain cramp. You can look it up under Joe Melnick.
M-E-L-N-I-C-K.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, there's another resource for you. And
okay. You know, here's another, which I know as under the term split freeze.
Uh-huh.
And that is a strategy which is used in couples work, and I've used it myself a number of times. When the couple is not ready to divorce, and not ready to make that decision to divorce, but clearly continuing to live together is making the whole situation worse because of the fact that they fight a great deal or because of the fact that the tension in the house is so great. So to be quick about it, mm-hmm. brief about it, under the rules of split freeze, two people agree to work out the details of money and access to the kids, and they agree for a specified period of time to live apart. During that period, they don't see each other, and they don't comment. They don't communicate with each other, and really, unless there's a compelling reason, for example, having to do with the kids, that would require them to talk with each other. So they live apart, each uses the time in counseling, typically with the same therapist, both of them with the same therapist. Each person uses the time apart as a form of retreat in the sense of examining his or her role in the marriage, both positive and negative, and talking about possibilities. At the end of that period apart, people come back together as a couple in the therapist's office and talk about what they have learned and how their perspective has changed and sort of take it from there. But it's to break a... Yeah.
Let me see if I understand this. When you say they're working with the same therapist, but not in the same room at the same time. For a while,
individually,
and
then after, at a certain point, after the work has been substantially individual, the couple often alternates ongoing individual sessions with couple sessions in which they begin more and more to meet together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's to break that kind of negative spiral, you know, negative conflicted connection with each other, work individually, and then having acquired insight to come back together in couples work when the immediate tension has been relieved and they're in a better position to consider the alternatives and what they might do about the problem. And Some people do divorce and some people don't.
Right. So you've seen people actually able to do that, that they really will stay away from each other and not engage.
Yeah.
And use that time.
Yeah. Now part of that, there's an important part of that I didn't mention, and that is they make an agreement, a very serious agreement, that they will not get involved with anybody else.
Oh yeah.
They will not start an independent romantic sexual relationship with anybody, and mm-hmm. also they will not build up their own private chorus, of friends and family that mm-hmm. are taking their side against the other.
Mm-hmm.
So they will not do the sorts of things that are guaranteed to make the situation even more polarized.
Right. I have not done that. I have done a very tepid version of that, or smaller version of that, in that a lot of times people come in and they'll really get into issues in the session. And then they go home and try to continue talking about that. It works okay in the office when I can direct traffic in some ways or help them when they get stuck or those kinds of things. But then if they try to go ahead and try it on their own, and they don't have those supports or those aids, they really get themselves into hot water because they have been kind of keeping a lid on all of this stuff before they got into my office. So sometimes we come up with rules about not talking about anything that we've talked about in the session, between sessions, that the place to deal with it because it's tough, because it's charged, because it has all kinds of emotion to it, is in the office with me until they feel that they've developed some more skills, until they feel more confident that they can apply those skills and keep themselves from getting into bad spaces or spiraling down or whatever. So that's
sure.
a bit of a version of that, light version.
Right.
So we've only got 3 minutes left, David, and we didn't get even halfway through the stuff that you laid out in the beginning. So we're going to have to wrap up and do it again next week, you think?
Yeah, time for a really, really quick point.
Yeah, we've got 3 minutes.
Okay. Well, maybe even time for a couple. One is there are situations, I feel, and Jim, I suspect you do too, when nobody would seriously quarrel that divorce is really, clearly right decision to take, in the absence of treatment on the part of one person. If there's very
True.
Serious addiction, alcohol addiction, whatever it might be, if there's serious abuse, child abuse, spouse abuse,
right.
For many people, divorce would be the right option to take, or at least a very demanding and often residential treatment program and a reconsideration of the marriage after successful completion of the retraining.
Right.
Would you say so?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And
one of the things I was going to say about, you know, getting help, and that, you know, for all kinds of issues, especially if somebody in the couple has a serious emotional or substance abuse problem or whatever, is, you know, to get on that as quickly as you can and as seriously as you can. I think it was John Gottman who does a lot of research with couples. Came up with the figure that people tend to get into couples counseling 6 years too late. So if you're starting to see some issues, but you think, oh, maybe I'll let them go. I think that if you can address them really early, there's a lot better chance of solving them, and also that they don't get the bitterness or the anxiety or the, you know, like you said, sense of betrayal doesn't get so ingrained. So that's it.
Excellent point.
All right. And,
okay, buddy.
I'll see you next week.
Great.
Okay.
Great.
All right. Here's Megan Jo Wilson to take us away with Take Me Away.
Together.